a very good friend of World Football Daily and a big member of our family here at worldfootballdaily.com. He is a man who is the leader of the Mad About Football Boys on the club podcast. And he is, of course, a football broadcaster and writer as well for various television channels and websites around the internet. He is Mr. Juan Arango joining us on the line today. Juan, how are you, my man? How are you doing? It's a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Doing good, man. It's a bit gloomy and rainy down here in Miami, but it's better than being gloomy and rainy in London, right?
Hey, you are talking to the wrong man right about now. I have glorious bright sunshine for the last week and a half. I've been barbecuing for the last 2 weeks straight.
Is it the only week and a half that you have sunshine over there?
Yeah, okay. This is not going to last very long, which is why we're making the most of it. But hey, it's nice to see that we've at least switched it over slightly with the weather, and you're having to deal with a little bit of English weather while I get to enjoy the brief spell of Miami-like sunshine that we get down here, man. So I will have you know...
Yeah, are there any girls running around in bathing suits over there?
Yeah, there's not too many of them. I think Miami still might win on that one.
There we go. Yeah, that is our conversation right there.
Yeah, you've always got that trump card to play, haven't you, down in Miami, man? You've always got that last little thing that we can't compete with here in the UK. Look, we may not be able to compete on the women and on the weather, but we can compete at least on the sporting front. We've got all these transfer rumours going on, but I guess North America and the Americas in general are starting to compete with us when it comes to excitement. We've got the Gold Cup reaching the knockout stages, and we've got tonight the Copa Libertadores final, first leg. Cannot wait for this. Olimpia taking on Atletico Mineiro. Atletico Mineiro, a side that maybe we almost thought we would see in this in the final stage of this tournament. But Olimpia, not many people were talking about them when we kicked off the Copa Libertadores.
Well, Olimpia's been a team that's really gone under the radar, if you really look at it. Really not a team that has an out-and-out superstar. Of course, nobody can, from a media standpoint, compare to a Ronaldinho Gaúcho, and especially on the European side nowadays, a player like that, not really nobody on Olimpia can compare from a media standpoint. That being said, though, if you start looking at what a person such as Eru Almeida, he's been the great equalizer for that Olimpia team. He came over after having pretty much a fallout and the lack of success that he had at the senior side with the Guatemalan national team. Came over to Olimpia. He's the biggest idol over at that club. Has won as a player. Has won all types of trophies. Won a Copa Libertadores back in 1990 as the goalkeeper for that Olimpia side. It's a team that's gone under the radar, pretty much. But at the same time, if you start looking at what this team's been able to do, they were seeded number three for a reason. I mean, they were very consistent. Collectively, they were a team that were able to really shut people down. Also, they were, ironically, they were co-leaders as far as scoring were concerned in the group stage of the Copa Libertadores with 16 goals that were scored by Olimpia during that phase. They pretty much cruised through that phase. You also started seeing how they were playing against teams such as Fluminense, really handling them in their own backyard. Playing against Santa Fe, yeah, it wasn't the most effective performance, but it was still a very practical one where they were able to win 2-0 at the Defensor del Chaco. They've been very tough at home. That's going to be the big issue for a team such as Atlético Mineiro. So when you start seeing that, that's also a very interesting factor to take into account.
I wanted to ask you about that that quarterfinal game against Fluminense, because we were talking for so much of the early part of the Copa Libertadores about the domination of the Brazilian sides, how financially and, of course, it's in the style and caliber of their players that they bring out onto the pitch. But was that Fluminense game the game that really made you stand up and look at Olimpia as a possible Copa Libertadores winner for this season?
No, actually it was during the group stage. They were really handling their business. They were a team that really didn't have a great deal of complication. I mean, they were able to beat Newell's Old Boys very handily in the group stage. That's when you started to start seeing this team. Hey, this team could do some damage. How much? That's another question that I wouldn't be able to answer right then and there. But I had mentioned a couple of times on the show, on the Mad About Football show, hey, watch out with Olimpia. This team could cause some damage. I didn't expect them to get to the final, but if you really look at it, you're dealing with one of the most consistent teams in the tournament from beginning to end. They're looking to become only the second team in Copa Lib history to win the tournament coming out of the early qualifying stages. The only team that's done that before was Estudiantes back in 2009. And you start looking at this team, and you see okay, you have a Freddy Barreiro, Tapia Salgueiro, the two scoring, the one of the more dangerous scoring tandems in this tournament. You have Martin Silva, who is a Uruguayan international. He's confided by Oscar Washington Velarde to back up Muslera in goal. He's a very solid player. The back line of three that's been implemented by Everett Walmeda since he arrived. And ironically, it was his son that was coaching Olimpia during the qualifying phase. Again, that being said, all of the effort that they put into Copa Lib really saw them suffer on the domestic end, as they were pretty much ending up in the middle of the table in the Paraguayan league this past semester.
On the other side of this final, of course, we've got Club Atlético Mineiro, a side who, even if you're not a big follower of South American football, everybody knows about and packed with stars in its starting lineup. Will Mineiro be going into this game expecting to win as a team? Will there be a confidence from Atlético Mineiro coming out, or will maybe just some of these tighter fixtures that we've seen in the knockout stages of this tournament, of course, just got through against Tijuana, just got through against Newell's Old Boys on penalties as well. I mean, will they be cautious and really wary of this Olimpia side?
At this stage, I think you have to throw caution out the window. I mean, you're here, and you got to go and use whatever is being offered to you and whatever got you to the dance. Atlético Mineiro knows it. Now, you mentioned about barely getting by, but here's one of the big caveats with what you're saying, is that they've struggled offensively. Ronaldinho Gaúcho has not been the most solid player in the past month and a half. Bernard was missing from the from the team due to Confederations Cup. He's still, getting back into the swing of things. Joe has also been important. It's also been those contributors such as Luan, Gio Tardelli, Rever, who was missed dearly, who was missed greatly during the semifinals against Newell's Old Boys after he was sent off against Cholos. These types of Gilberto Silva, let's add him to the mix. I mean, I was trying to do something, a little exercise last night, and you could make an argument that there are six players on this. Oh, I forgot to mention Vitor as well, the goalkeeper. You could have six players on this Atlético Mineiro side that can be part of a Copa Lib 11. I mean, it really says a great deal about this team. Yes, they've been the most dynamic. They've been the story of the tournament. But there's been instances where they've stumbled, or they've left you a couple of doubts here and there, but they've been able to bounce back and get the results when needed. That's the most important thing. And it's a saying that my dad would always say, champions always find a way to pull a game out of their hat and always pull it out of their ass. And they've been able to do some in some really dire and some really brilliant situations.
So going into tonight's game, how do the two teams approach it? Mineiro on the road. How do they look at it? And do they go out all guns blazing, or they just try and keep a clean sheet, a 0-0 draw on the road to take back to Brazil?
Let's see who scores the first goal. If there's a first goal scored, if Atlético Mineiro don't know what it is to stay back. They're a team that don't have the players to drop back and defend. That's when they've been most compromised. If they go with that tactic, I think Olimpia will eat them up. Could probably eat them up in their own backyard, in Olimpia's backyard. If you start looking at what Olimpia can do, of course, they're going to be the ones that are going to depend mostly on the counterattack. And you could see them also go for broke a little bit more. In this first match, it's going to be really telling, because you do not want to be the team that gets behind first, especially if you're Atlético Mineiro. The reason being, because Olimpia are so solid on defense, despite playing with a three-man back line, having two outside backs, outside wing backs essentially, coming back in support and stuff. To be able to get behind to this Olimpia side has meant murder to anyone that has played them. And Atlético Mineiro, Cuca, knows that very well. So that's going to be very interesting to see from that perspective. Who ends up scoring first? Is it Atlético Mineiro? Expect them to continue putting the pedal to the metal as well, because they know that coming back and going back and having to play at the Mineirão now instead of the Estadio Independencia is going to be a major factor for them as well.
Juan, am I right in, I just want to clarify this, because I've been trying to do a bit of research on tonight's game. Atlético Mineiro, they haven't won a Copa Libertadores, have they?
No, they haven't. Actually, they were in 19, one of the biggest or darkest moments in Atlético Mineiro's history was back in the Copa Libertadores, back in 1981. They ended up in the same group as Flamengo, the team with Zico and that whole crew that ended up winning and ended up embarrassing Liverpool in Japan that same year. They had to play a playoff match because they were pretty much tied in goals, you know, points, goals, everything. They ended up playing over in Goiânia back in 1981. And the referee for that match, it's a neutral site, neutral fans, everything neutral. But ironically, the referee for that match flew in with Flamengo from Rio. So and players were sent off, and it became pretty much in Atlético Mineiro lore is roubareia, or is the robbery. And to that day in international play, to this day in international play for Atlético Mineiro, everybody remembers that that particular match. They're trying to exercise, quote unquote, that particular demon, and they're looking to do so. They've come close. They haven't been in many Copa Libs, but they know that this is a big opportunity, especially when you have players like Bernard, when you have players like Ronaldinho, et al. So it's really interesting, and it's been a very interesting story following Atlético Mineiro ever since Ronaldinho went over there and thus began his renaissance in Brazilian football and world football too.
Do you think he has? Do you think he's refound his vigor since moving back home to Brazil? Do you think that was an essential move to go home and to go back to somewhere where he really felt like was truly his home after it maybe turned, I don't want to say sour, but you know, it wore off at Barcelona, the magic?
Which Ronaldinho are we talking about, though? Is it the Ronaldinho that just came over from Flamengo and, you know, you saw him just going through the motions and not really contributing that much with Flamengo? Or are you talking about the Ronaldinho now who helped his team pretty much fight with Fluminense until pretty much the final stages of the season for the Brasileirão title? Or is it that Ronaldinho that had a chance to be able to play for the Brazilian national team and for, you know, one reason or another wasn't able to cash it in, but at the same time helping Atlético Mineiro get to pretty much an unprecedented point in their history?
I guess it's been, as you say, a transition since arriving in Brazil, but there has been, even when he was Flamenco, I felt when he, especially when he first went there, there was that kind of, I don't want to sound cheesy and say, you know, twinkle in the eye type thing, but there was a renewed kind of exuberance to his play at first.
No, you're right. There wasn't. At least a couple of matches you saw that, and you knew that the spark was still there, that you know, flash of brilliance was still available. I mean, there's some goals that he scored that you're like, damn. That's all you could say. I mean, still, there's been some... with Ronaldinho, what's amazing with him, it's not the goals that he scores that just make you go, wow. It's the ones that he almost scores. And you know that it's there. You see him play with a smile. You see him play with a little bit more pace, a little bit more desire. Have the results gone his way in the past couple of weeks? No, but he's still with a smile. So you know that he's still enjoying it and he's having fun with it. I mean, he knows that he has to have a great final, a phenomenal final, in order to be able to get back at least on the road to recovery with his relationship with Luis Felipe Scolari as well. His ambition, obviously, is to get to the World Cup in 2014. And also, he wants to make history, become the fourth player ever to win a World Cup, a Champions League, and a Copa Libertadores. Only three other players have done it, and he's on the precipice of becoming number four. So, I mean, right now, he knows he's getting towards the end of his career, and he really wants to build that legacy even more.
It will be a chance for Ronaldinho and Atlético Mineiro to make history for himself and for the club as well as they take on Olympia tonight. Juan, we also had, of course, the Gold Cup action yesterday for the US men's national team. Breck Shea with that vital goal to give him a win over Costa Rica. 3 points, 9 points in total to top the group, out and out winners. For the US men's national team and for Jurgen Klinsmann in particular, this is a really positive look from his young, kind of exuberant B team, if you will, that have got the job done twice against poor opposition, but also now gone and got it done in a slightly less emphatic manner, though, against Costa Rica. It shows that he does have a lot to think about still, with some inclusions to his World Cup qualifying squad when we come out of Gold Cup action and then back into the World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, no doubt. He has a lot of players to look at. And you mentioned one of them, Breck Shea. Obviously, that guy, Landon Donovan, might have something to say about his inclusion into the World Cup squad or even World Cup qualifying squad as well. So, I mean, also, don't forget Chris Wondolowski, who's one of the leading goal scorers in the tournament as well. So, I mean, we could go on. And I've been one of the biggest critics of Jurgen Klinsmann ever since he took over. And now you're starting to see the fruits of his labor start to get. You see a U.S. team not only playing well, but also believing that they can play well. And that's very key because if there's one thing that I haven't seen with U.S. sides in a while, it's swagger. You know, they go in. I happen to be in Jamaica for the World Cup qualifying side, World Cup qualifying game at the office, and you saw them during practice just so relaxed, knowing that they were going to win. I mean, and you never saw them really show a vibe of, oh my God, you know, we have a possibility. You know, they knew they had sky high confidence, and that really says a lot about what Klinsmann's done. Is he the answer? Well, it's still left to be said. I mean, to me, he's done a great deal with the squad. And again, I said, I mean, I've criticized some things that he's done, some things that he hasn't done, but you got to give him credit because he's been able to turn the mentality around a great deal. And now, at least from the team standpoint, you see that these teams, the Belize, the Guatemalas during that friendly, those types of teams, that it's no longer, oh my God, are we going to win? Are we going to be able to come up? We're the U.S. We're supposed to win these games. And that's important to see, especially from the outside looking in.
The U.S. now, I mean, we see in World Cup qualifying, they've got their fate very much in their own hands right now. They're the only team to come out with 9 points from their group stage in the Gold Cup. All things are pointing to, and I don't want to rush to say it, because obviously we talk about the balance of power in football a hell of a lot. Are the U.S. now really staking a claim to be the dominant side above Mexico in CONCACAF football?
Oh, I don't.
With all the problems that Chep De La Torre is having as well.
But football is so cyclical that sometimes the U.S. will be on top, sometimes Mexico. I mean, just about a year ago, who would have thought that the U.S. were going to be playing better than Mexico, especially after the way that the Mexican national team won the gold medal. They had won the under-17 World Cup just, 2 years ago. It's cyclical. So, I mean, whatever they do, that's always a positive. And let's be honest. It's CONCACAF. It's the U.S. and Mexico pretty much as the top dogs in this region. Now, who is 1 and 1A? That depends pretty much on the time in history where we're looking at, especially in the past decade or so. Mexico, you're slowly starting to see them improve. There's still a couple of doubts here and there. And the big issue, again, is Chepo de la Torre. You know, is he holding back? Is he not really being very imaginative with attacking options? Is he trying a little bit too hard to try and find options? We'll see. But the U.S. right now, they're confident. It's all about confidence in these types of things. And that's been the difference so far. You see a Mexican team that hasn't been too confident, the results show it, compared to a U.S. team whose results also show the confidence they're showing right now. Now, will it be the same when they face off later on this year? We'll see. That's still left to be seen.
We will be able to see that later on in World Cup qualifying. This momentum, though, for the U.S. is going to be fantastic coming out of a Gold Cup. If obviously they're in the knockout rounds, in theory, like right now, we should be thinking semifinals, even final for the United States at the moment.
Nah, the U.S. in the Gold Cup has to always think finals. U.S. are obligated to win the Gold Cup. I mean, they're in Mexico. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And I think as fans, we need to have that mentality. No, we're obligated. No, damn, we're the U.S. We're supposed to beat these guys. And there needs to be more of that. And to me, World Cup qualifiers and in Gold Cup, damn, they're the U.S. They are obligated to win this title. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Same thing goes with Mexico. And to be quite honest, and I was saying it even in the dark days last year when, the U.S. were barely able to get by Antigua. They were able to lose to Jamaica in the previous phase. Now, it's the U.S. They're going to qualify for the World Cup. I don't see that not happening. They're just way better than the third best team in CONCACAF.
when I think you and Rafa might be the hardest critics on the US men's national team, might have the highest expectations for it. But I tell you what, acceptance of mediocrity is not the right the way to develop in football.
No. I mean, you can't accept it anymore. I mean, this is not 1989 anymore. You know, oh my God, we're just happy to get. No, damn, we belong in a World Cup. Forget, you know, oh, we're happy to be there. No. I think if the mentality changed a little bit more and we're not just happy to be there, I think we'd go a little bit farther. And I've said the same thing to Mexican fans. You know, guys, why are you just satisfied for getting to a World Cup and playing a fifth game? Why don't you think about going to a final? Why don't you think about, you know, higher things? You know, there's, I remember somebody told me, you know, always shoot for the moon, because if you miss, you're gonna hit a star anyway. You know, you're gonna come damn close, at least if you have that mentality. I'm not saying, hey, we're gonna be world champions, but at the same time, I'm not saying, oh, if we get out of the group stage, we're happy. There needs to be a little bit less acceptance of oh, let's just get out of the group phase and it's all good. You know, fine, we get out of the group phase and we'll be on Letterman. So what? What does that do to you? It doesn't. You know, who cares? You know, win a World Cup, and then you're going to start seeing how things start changing a little bit. And you know, I mean, people have forgotten all about, you know, Project 2020 that was started maybe about 15, 20 years ago, that they're planning on the U.S. being a world champion by 2020. And nobody talks about that anymore. So, you know, we need to get back on track with that mentality of, hey, we got to go and, I don't know about win a World Cup. I mean, let's be honest. But, damn, let's give all possible hell to the Brazils of the world, to the Argentinas, to the Spain, to the Germany, so on and so forth. And I think that's starting to happen now. And I think the mentality began with Jurgen Klinsmann, and you got to hand it to him.
Wham, before we let you go, because that's a perfect note to finish on, let's just quickly tell us what's coming up on Mad About Football, my man, this week.
We're supposed to be meeting up with Johnny and Tom with the Mexican Soccer Show to talk about Liga San Comer MX, as they just changed their name. We're going to be talking about the Mexican League. Also, a couple of interesting guests. I don't want to name them, not because they're not confirmed. It's just that, you know, I usually name things and I usually jinx them. So I don't want to go out there. But I think many fans of the Bundesliga will be happy. And I think many fans of football in general will be happy as well, because it's not just about football we talk about. We talk about some movies as well, with a very interesting guest, to say the least.
I'll tell you what, Wayne, you already have us on tenterhooks waiting to find out who the guests are that are coming on the Mad About Football show. You can check into that at worldfootballdaily.com. That's where you can find Wayne and all the club podcasts. Wayne, it's an absolute pleasure to have had you on the show today, mate. We always enjoy catching up with you and talking football, and I cannot wait to check in with the Mad About Football boys and see just exactly who you have on the show coming up, mate. Take care and have a fantastic day, mate.
Yeah, you too, man. Take care. Cheers.
Cheers, Wayne. Wayne Arango there joining us here from the Mad About Football boys on worldfootballdaily.com. Wayne, of course, you can find there. You can find all around the globe in terms of Goal TV commentary, in terms of writing at football.com, in terms of everything when it comes to football. Just got a huge footballing brain, that man.